Hello, everyone. I'm Glenn. As you can see from my description, you might know me through the work through Prism, working on the Magic Extensibility Framework, and now recently I have officially become a REST head, and I'm working in WCF on our HTTP stack. And I'm going to talk to you guys today about how to take some REST with WCF. I definitely want your questions and your feedback, so feel free to ping me and John Galloway and Javier. They're over there and they're monitoring any tweets that you send to my name, so they will let me know. So first I wanted to just talk a bit about why we care about, or why you should care about HTTP and REST, and why we care about it from an industry perspective. And what I mean about caring about it is, why should we care when we're transporting information or exposing things over the web? Why should we care about HTTP? Well, one reason that we should care is because of reach. Any device that connects to the web, you can pretty much guarantee that it speaks HTTP, because HTTP is the language of the web, the underlying application layer protocol. So if you want to have maximum reach, both to down-level browsers, non-browser clients, Silverlight clients, devices, etc., HTTP is a sure bet. Another thing is scale. The internet, the servers of the web have been built to do a bunch of things for you, like provide great scalability. But in order to get that scale, you have to obey the rules of HTTP. And what I mean by that, for example, is in HTTP, you have HTTP methods like get, put, post, delete. And all those methods have different rules associated with them. So for example, if you do a get, servers can do some caching for you. That means that when I issue a request, the server that I'm issuing that request to doesn't necessarily have to provide the answer. Other caching servers can act on behalf of that server and say, oh, I've got the thing that you want. But to do that requires me to play well over HTTP and to obey those rules. Evolvability. I mean, if you look at the infrastructure of the web is like the largest scale application at a meta level. It keeps evolving and things don't break. And it's tolerant. It's tolerant to the fact that sometimes things move. But the infrastructure of the web keeps going. And it is fault-tolerant as well, in the sense that if there's a problem over here, then other parts of the web will compensate. And a lot of that has to do with the underlying HTTP application layer protocol. And the last has to do with simplicity. So HTTP defines this uniform interface. We were just talking about it. There's the HTTP methods, there's the headers, etc. And the advantage of when you follow the rules of HTTP is you can say, any resource that's exposed over HTTP, I pretty much know how to talk to it. The laws of HTTP define that for me. Whereas, for example, if I talk to a SOAP service, I have to have a WSDL file. That WSDL file is what defines for me the universe of things that are available. I can't just simply start querying without having that extra information in order to be able to use that service. So in .NET 3.5, we heard a lot of customers that told us, hey, you know, we want to talk over HTTP and we want to do it with WCF. Why? Well, we've been building our services and we've been building a lot of these SOAP services, but we want some of these benefits that I was talking about in that first slide. So really to do that, we need to have a richer model for working directly with HTTP rather than being tunneled. And so we did a bunch of work, which we called WCF HTTP. We introduced WebGet, WebInvoke. I know how much all you guys love attributes. But we introduced a way to take a service that could also talk over other transports and say, hey, one of the transports that it can talk over is HTTP. Now, that works as long as you're only using a limited set of functionality of HTTP. In this case, really, you're focused mostly on the body and maybe some transport security. But the experience wasn't necessarily ideal. So if you look at this picture here, you see, like, I describe it as kind of economy class, you know, and your knees might be scrunched up against the chair, but the plane flies. In 4.0, though, and a lot of people, I think, don't know this, and part of this, I think, is we just haven't done a really good job of getting the word out. We did do a lot of improvements to our web HTTP stack in order to support building more RESTful-style applications. And so one of the things we added, which Brad mentioned, was this inherent ability to do what's called content negotiation. Content negotiation, you know, one of the things the web offers in terms of evolvability is this idea that resources can have one-to-many representations, and clients can request preferences for which type of representations they want. So I could come along and say, hey, I support PDF. If you have a PDF, give it to me. If you don't, I'll take XML. And this happens through the accept headers, which are a standard part of the uniform interface. And so in 4.0, we introduced in WCF the ability to say, hey, if you come at us with application/XML, we'll give you XML. If you come at us with application/JSON in your accept headers, we'll give you JSON. And this way, you don't have to annotate your services and such. Now, the only downside to that is that HTTP is not limited to XML and JSON. You can do way more than that. And you find yourself kind of hitting walls in the 4.0 model if you try to go past that. You have the ability to drop down to a stream, but that's not ideal. But still in all, for people that were just really working with those two formats, and a lot of folks out there that are building web APIs are doing that, it was sufficient. We also added this ability to have these automatic help pages. And what automatic help pages are is, and I think I have a demo on this, is, you know, there's no WSDL, as I said, but what we found was a common pattern for web APIs is to have like a web page where there's snippets, and those snippets will say, hey, here's the resource that's available, here's what the body looks like when you send it and when you receive it back. I'm actually not going to show that demo because we'll show some other demos. The next thing that we did was we heard a lot of feedback from customers about, hey, this SVC config file thing is painful for me. When I'm in MVC or I'm working with ASP.NET, I have routes, and that's really nice. I just register the route, it's in code, compile time checking, etc. Why can't I do that with WCF? So in 4.0, we introduced this thing called service route, which you're going to see. And service route can be hosted, you basically can host a service and configure it as a route in your global.asax. Now, there are some limitations on it, so just giving you some inputs or some ideas to think about when using it is that WCF today has this inherent notion of a base address, and so the route, the path that you specify in the route becomes the base address, and our base address doesn't support any kind of constraints or pattern matching today. So when you use the routes, it's great if you say, like, here's a fixed resource that I want to expose, but you won't necessarily get all the constraint matching and stuff. But it does improve the experience exponentially by getting rid of the SVC file. And we did a bunch of work around caching. So what we heard from people was, hey, that's great. I like that. That's a definite improvement over what we had before. But there's still a lot of pain points I'm suffering with. And the reasoning for that is the model that's there is designed to say, hey, I can talk to anything, but I don't want to talk to anything. I want to talk over HTTP. Let me have my HTTP. Give me a model that's really well suited for it. And so that's really what we've been focused on now. We've been trying to go to the next level and say, you know, let's not focus anymore. Like, we still have this model of you can write a service and you can expose it over anything, and it can talk over HTTP or over TCP or over MSMQ, but let's come with a model that is really built from the ground with the idea of I'm just exposed over HTTP. And all the kinds of things that the spec RFC 2616 says I should be able to do, make that possible for me and don't make me go through a lot of pains in doing it. And so these are the fundamentals of what we're doing. If I give you some fundamental principles here, the first one is we want you to be able to use WCF to talk to any client. As I mentioned, you use HTTP, that's like a credit card that's accepted anywhere. So if I'm on a down-level device that has a browser that doesn't even have JavaScript, well, guess what? You know, HTTP gives you verbs, HTTP methods like post and get, and browsers understand those. So it'd be nice if I could just simply have a browser on the other end that is receiving information, sorry, have a browser that is talking to a WCF service, and there's no friction in between, right? It's just sending HTTP messages and receiving HTTP back. But we also want to support richer browser experiences, like folks that are using jQuery, and they want to get things like JSON back. They don't want to just have, you know, plain old HTML, for example, but they may want to be sending form URI encoded stuff in the post, but getting back other formats like JSON in the response. But then we have other clients like Atom feed readers, for example. Atom is a completely different format. Yes, it's markup rendering is really XML, but it's got its own format. It's its own media type. So we really want to be able to say that you can use any media type that you want to leverage whatever clients are available. So let's take a quick look at what I mean. So what I'm going to show you is this WCF HTTP Hello resource. Now, I'm not trying to dazzle you or impress you with this UI. You'll see why in a second. But what I want to show you is that in the work that we're doing, we're basically saying, like, hey, if you want to drop down to the raw metal of HTTP, you should be able to do it. We're not going to force you to do it. So I'm going to go here, and I get this simple HTML page, and I'm going to enter Javier, enter a person to say hello to, and it says added Javier. And then I'm going to invoke this hello resource on the back, and you see it came back, and it said hello Javier. So then I'm going to put John's name, and now I say get hello resource, and it says hello Javier, hello John. So what just happened there? The first thing is, this is just a standard web page. It's an HTML page. It's not even an ASPX, because I wanted to drive home the point that, hey, we're just working with raw HTTP. So here's an HTML form, right? I've set my encoding type to application form encoded, and I'm doing post. You should never, ever, ever do gets that cause side effects on the server. At least that's not what you're supposed to do. Get is a safe, idempotent operation. But post, however, is not idempotent or safe. So I'm posting some data, and then what I have is a link that then goes and retrieves that from that resource on the back end. Now notice here, this is not about a remote procedure call. This is just working through the fabric of HTTP. Let's look at what it looks like on the server. So one of the things we heard in the past was, hey, if I want to work with HTTP, yeah, WCF gives me the ability to do it, but I have to use all these static APIs. And those are kind of painful for me because it's difficult to test. It's not really intuitive. So it would be great if I could do the things that I want to do without actually having to make my code more difficult to maintain. So what we've done is we've introduced these new classes which wrap HTTP. They're called HTTP request and HTTP response messages. If you're familiar with the REST starter kit, then this might be you might recognize these. These are strongly typed representations of HTTP, and they're aligned very closely with the spec. So it's not giving you an abridged view of HTTP. It's saying everything that the spec says should be exposed and that you should be able to do is available through these messages. So if we look at the code here on the post, one of the things you can see is I'm taking in a request and I'm taking in a response as parameters. What's nice about that is I no longer have to now have static APIs. I don't use the web operation context, if you're familiar, which is the older way that we do it. I just get these nice parameters that get plugged in. That means in a unit test, I can create those. I can test them, no problem. But it's also intuitive in the sense that I just know to get these types, which are discoverable, and I work with them. So if you look at what I'm doing here, is I'm grabbing the body and I'm reading it in as a string. And then what I'm doing is I'm using this new, we have this new type that we're introducing for working with loosely, it's a loosely typed way to work with JSON or to work with form URL encoded content. We call it JSON value. And you can see here that I'm using this extension method, form URL encoded extensions, and I'm calling parse form URL encoded, passing in the body. And then I'm getting some content back. And now that is a dynamic. So I'm basically accessing the person which is the name that was posted in that form, and then I'm adding to a collection that person, because this is really a post operation, so I'm adding a child resource. Then I'm setting the content. Now notice here that this string content here. So content itself is actually a base class. We have a base class called HTTP content that you can derive from to do all types of things. We have string content and stream content in the box, but we're also going to pass things like object content. And object content will allow you to say, hey, I want to return an object, but I also want to set headers. Anyway, stepping up at the meta level, what I'm trying to show here is that if you just want to get raw access to work with HTTP, then we're making sure you can do that. But we're not stopping there. This is more just saying that you have this option when you need it. All right. Now, as we said, we also have other kinds of clients and devices. So one of the things that's become very popular, we know we have the Atom protocol. AtomPub, a way of publishing feeds and such. And OData has come along and is using that, a derived form of that, for exposing data. So one of the things that we want to say is that the same resources can expose multiple representations. They're not limited to one. And content negotiation, as Brad was mentioning, kicks in. And we allow you even to plug in your own formats. So I'm just going to show you a very quick demo. You might have seen this if you've seen my PDC talk, but we're not going to spend a lot of time on it. But what I want to show you is the fact that we're putting our money where our mouth is as far as supporting different formats. What you just saw there was, hey, I can send raw HTTP and I can drop down to the wire to work with it. But not everybody wants to do that. So let's take this. This is a jQuery front end running in an ASP.NET application. It's not MVC, and it's this contact manager application. And what it allows you to do is it supports multiple representations. So here you can see I got an XML representation. But it also supports JSON. So if I go here and put a name like Brad Wilson, I'm really into the name thing today. Actually, let's first go and check out Fiddler. Right. Let's launch Fiddler. Oh, it's already launched. Why is that not working? Let's not do that. Okay. We will come back to that one. Did I stop it? Oh, I stopped it. That's why. Let's try that again. So what I'm doing here... Yeah, okay. That's not working for some reason. All right. Let's close that. Let's run this again, and I'm going to put Brad Wilson. And what's going to happen is that's actually doing a form URL encoded post to the server, and it's returning JSON. If we look into the code behind, or we look at the web page, you will see that it's using jQuery behind the scenes. Let's see where it is. Here. And it is actually just using jQuery to send the information back, right? You can see up here it's doing an AJAX call. Okay, so that same resource is supporting receiving form URL encoded, and it's returning JSON. Now, Brad mentioned he gave a demo of content negotiation. And as I said, you know, a resource in HTTP can actually be anything. It doesn't have to be some textual representation. Right, so here we can see that this is coming back as XML. Well, let's take that URI and let's go into Fiddler, and I'll zoom in so you can see it. And let's now set my accept header to be image/png. So there you go. So the same resource that was coming back in JSON is now also coming back as an image. Well, how does that work? So if we go over to our contact resource here, and we do that Fiddler call again, you'll see that I'm actually returning a contact. So I'm not forcing this operation to know about the fact that there's other kinds of representations. We're decoupling the representations from the resource, which means I can add new resources in the future without having to change my code. So one representation that's supported here is this image. Now, is it taking the contact and actually transforming it into an image? No, what it's really doing is it's basically taking the contact, grabbing the ID, and transforming and finding an image associated with that contact. But the point I'm trying to drive here is that with WCF HTTP, with our new work, we're letting you say, hey, if you want to get in the middle and want to represent this any way you want to, any arbitrary fashion, you'll be able to do it. Okay, so you probably want to know how that image processor was actually achieved. So one of the things, I'm going to jump back to slide for a second. So in addition to caring about clients, we also want to make sure that your code is maintainable, right? We don't want to just make sure we give you functionality, but we want to make sure that you have a good experience when you're working with the code. And we've heard a bunch of concerns that people have talked about. One, wanting better separation of concerns. Another, more testability. And a third one would be a simplified configuration model that doesn't force me to actually fall down to a SVC. To have to fall down to using a configuration file. So Victor's asking a question, and I will get to that in a second. So what we're doing here is we're saying, hey, I want to plug in different formats. Give me an easy way to do it. And there's other things that I want to do as well. So we're introducing this concept of code-based configuration. This is not locked yet, but we're exploring it. And we're saying that when messages come through, you have an opportunity to jump in the middle at two places and do some custom logic. So we have this concept, which is currently called processors. And processors address application-level concerns, meaning I may want to look at a message, like MVC, you have model binding. I may want to look at a message, parse headers, look at the URI, but actually manufacture objects that become parameters to the operation. For example, I may be taking a JSON representation and turning it into a contact, as the example that we showed. Those are really app-level concerns. OpenRasta has this notion of an operation interceptor. I may have said it wrong. Seb will correct me if I didn't. But OpenRasta is a nice RESTful framework that's out there for .NET, open source framework. You can think of these as somewhat analogous to those, not identically, but you know, Seb describes it as these are the things that I care about at my application. Then there are a bunch of low-level HTTP-specific concerns, like handling OAuth. And for those kind of things, we're actually introducing this low-level HTTP channel stack. We're changing the name because WCF already has a channel stack, so don't think that this is that. This actually plugs in at our existing channel stack. And it gives you a lightweight way to just handle messages. So the difference is that the bottom model is a Russian doll model, where one calls the other, and so it goes all the way down, and then it goes all the way back up. The top model is more of a pipeline, where we have a request pipeline and a response pipeline. So all that information you can see is actually getting configured, and then I will take the question, here in this configuration class. So you'll notice that I have this register request processors for operation, and I'm going and saying, hey, I want to support FormURL encoding. I want to support OData. I want to support PNG on the response side. And these are things that any developer can author, plus third parties can create their own that would be available. Okay, so the question, why use a WCF REST service when I can do RESTful services from MVC controllers? I'd say there's multiple parts to that question. The first thing is, as I mentioned, WCF HTTP came around in 3.5. And you know, early days, I think it was before MVC1 ever shipped. And we had a lot of customers that moved and said, hey, we're building SOAP services. We want to actually do these more RESTful things. So the work that we're doing now is really just a continuation of that. So I think on the one hand, there's like, hey, if you've been using WCF, this is going to feel like a much more comfortable model, I think, a breath of fresh air. As far as building RESTful services with MVC controllers, if MVC is working for you, then, you know, for example, for returning things like JSON result, then you should use it. The areas where I think that our stuff is going to get more interesting is that we're really specialized on HTTP, like I'm talking about these support for multiple representations, support for things like hypermedia. If you care about really leveraging the richness of HTTP with a multitude of clients, including desktop clients that have different capabilities, I think our stuff is going to be very interesting. Now, you can do that in MVC today, but it requires you to do a bunch of work. But it is possible. I'm not going to say it's not possible. So I think it's really up to you to choose. What I would say is I use the term like built for purpose, in the sense that a lot of the work that MVC does, even when you look at the stack ranking, is like, hey, we want all these things for sites. And I think what our mission is really focused on, what are the raw things you need over HTTP to really fully leverage that protocol. Does that answer the question? I will assume that answers the question. the other thing I will say again, though, is if MVC is working for you, then there's no problem using it. We're not trying to force people to say you must go one way or the other. And we are also, as I mentioned with service routes, looking for ways to integrate better so that it doesn't have to be a big noticeable choice. I mean, it's there for you wherever you are. Just to hone in on the service route thing, which I mentioned, you can see here that my contacts resource and my contact resource are actually both being registered in my routes. So that is what's called a service route. This is a new extension method. Okay, so there's a question of how do you plug in OpenID or SAML tokens? We don't have a sample yet, we will. And the bits that we have out there on CodePlex right now don't really have the plug point for it. As I mentioned, when you look at my diagram, there are two parts that we're working on. This top level, this top screen diagram, these processors, those are there. The bottom level, these channels, which we're actually going to rename, those are not there yet, but they will be coming shortly. So I don't have the question is, can you show an example of error handling with jQuery? I don't have an example of that today. What I would say is with these processors that we have, you could definitely get in the middle and just register a processor, author a processor that simply takes in the object that's going out the door, for example, and does some validation or looks at the object when it comes in. But we don't have a sample yet of doing that with jQuery, but that's a good thing for us to table. Part of our team is absolutely looking at jQuery and better integration scenarios, so this would definitely be a good one to add to the table. Okay, so going back to this diagram here and driving this back home, this idea that, hey, I was able to plug in addressing the separate concern of formatting. I didn't have to modify my service code or my resource code. I just plugged in the formats that I wanted to. And those processors themselves, by the way, are actually very easy to test because of the fact that they don't have any underlying static dependencies on the host or anything. So here's an example of that processor that creates the image. And you see here I have this supported media types override. This is going to change, but the basic concept will be there, where I say, hey, I'm a guy who replies to image/png, and then I have this write to stream method that passes me the instance of the returned value from the operation, and then I use that to get an image and create a stream. But processors are way more open than that. This is a special type of processor, but you can do things like simply take input values, for example. Like you could at this level say, I'm going to process an incoming message and I'm going to output, let's say, a string. And the way I can do that is I have this processor base class. that I can say that the incoming value here is an HTTP request message, and the outgoing value is, let's say, a string. And once I do that, I get this simple execute method. And on that onExecute method, that's where I put my logic that takes that message that came in and does whatever I want to do it. So my point here is the processors, are the media type processors, which you see below, are just one way to use processors, but you can use them for a ton of things. Which moves me into my next sample. So this example is pretty isolated in the sense that I'm using ASP.NET, but I'm just using WCF. Well, what if I wanted to take MVC store for MVC 3 and use that and add some RESTful type services to it? Now you might say, well, I could just do that with MVC. Why do I need to do that with WCF, going back to the question before? And I think the reason here I'm going to do that is because I want to leverage some of those capabilities that we're offering for plugging things in from an HTTP perspective, like formats, etc. So what I'm going to do is, MVC Store has this notion of albums, and you can browse albums and songs, etc. So what if we took MVC Store and we made it so that we could expose an album resource? And then what we could potentially do, if we taught that thing to support OData, we could actually query it and open that into something like PowerPivot. We could offer users more opportunities in terms of the types of clients that they use. Now, if you care about REST and hypermedia, and why you should care about hypermedia is it allows you to do distributed workflows, small w, complex processes, where the server is offering the client options of what to do next. Well, that requires you to really get into the representation as it's being rendered. And that's another example of where the work that we're doing, I think, aligns very well. But in this case, we're just going to expose albums, and we're going to try to expose them to OData. Now, immediately, we're going to be faced with a question of how do I register my WCF service? How does my WCF service get access to the data that it needs? Now, MVC Store, which was built to be like a really simple learning tool, it has a lot of hard-coded link statements throughout. So I don't want, the problem with that is then I will have to duplicate those within my WCF code, right? Because the MVC application is accessing albums. I want the WCF application to be able to work with albums. So what I'm going to do is I refactored MVC store to use a repository pattern. So here I have this album repository. And so now instead of link queries, I basically have a set of methods for accessing all the information that my application is going to need. It's nicely partitioned, and I don't have these link statements all over the place that I'll have to repeat to bring this into WCF. And I've also hidden, you know, it's persistence ignorant in the sense that, you know, I just work with the repository and then I tell it to persist, and it does the saving. Now, behind the scenes, it's using Entity Framework code first, but that's actually not that important to what we're going to show. And so I'm going to create this album resource. Now, that album resource is going to actually do a bunch of things. It's going to expose a bunch of things to the outside world. But the first thing is it needs to access that repository. So it would be nice, you know, MVC has talked a lot about dependency injection and the work they've done with Dependency Resolver. It would actually be really nice if I could just inject that album repository dependency into my resource, which would thereby make it more testable, but it would also allow me to share code or functionality between and data and state between my MVC controllers and between and my WCF service. So we're actually doing a bunch of work investigating, providing a nice way for you to work with inversion of control containers with WCF. And if you go into our CodePlex bits on wcf.codeplex.com, you'll see that we've introduced this configuration class, as I mentioned. And that configuration class, actually, if it implements an interface called iInstanceFactory, then we will do all the wire up of taking that, whatever you put in that method, and making it wire up in the right places in WCF so that it will essentially be your factory, so that when services get created, they go to your code. And it doesn't force you to have to know about understanding the entire WCF configuration model like you do today to be able to plug this thing in. So what I did is, because I'm on an MVC application, I said, well, MVC has a dependency resolver. It would be kind of cool if I could just share that and use that, because they have a similar signature. Dependency resolver has an additional method of getting multiple, but at this level, I'm just getting a service, so I don't care. So here you see that I've created this MVC host configuration, and it's taking an iDependency resolver in its constructor, and it's going to just use that. Well, how do I configure that host? How do I get that configuration plugged in? So what I have is, if we go into my, if we look at my solution, I've created this MVC store HTTP configuration. And that guy takes a dependency resolver, but it's also going to be a place where I can put custom logic relating to which processors I want registered for supporting processing the message, dealing with formats, etc. Then I'm going to register that in my global ASAX, and once I do that, I'll be wired up so that I can share things between them. So here you see that I have this route.addServiceRoute, and I have an album resource, and I'm saying I'm going to hang this off at albums, and I'm passing it that configuration object. So let's run this and see what that will do for us. Excuse me. So if I go now to albums, we see that I'm getting back XML. So it's fortunately, because of the fact that I have the IOC ability there to plug in my repository, I'm sharing, but I'm now able to expose things in a different way. Now, in general, when I think about people that look at REST or web APIs versus, say, you know, probably the standard case of where I might just return JSON from a site, I think the difference is, in one sense, you're really focused on a programmatic API that you want to make available to lots of clients, and this is what we're focused on here. Whereas in the other, often you're just focused on, let me provide a more fluid interface using something like jQuery that offers me a better responsive experience. So I think the third-party aspect is interesting there as well, in the sense that I might have another browser application living somewhere that is consuming this and driving it in to its as a mashup within its within the app. Okay, so what we want to do, as I said, is we want to enable OData. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to register a processor. So I'm going to go to my configuration class. And on the response, and the way this works, which is pretty nice, this actually gets called for every single operation. So if all you do is just register some code here, it will automatically attach to all your different resource operations or service operations. But if you want to do some conditional code, you can, because you have the operation, you can get to the name of the operation, the parameters, the URI template, etc. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say processors.add, and I'm going to add in an album feed processor, which is going to provide for me an OData feed. Okay, that's all I'm going to do, and I'm going to run this. Now, OData supports a query format. So what I really want to be able to do is actually not just use OData as far as the resulting format that comes back, but it would be great if I could actually support the OData URI format and have it automatically handle applying that against the response objects or the collections that I'm returning from my service. So one of the things we're focused on in our web APIs is what we're calling query composition. So if we look at my album resource, which is here, You see that I have this Get Albums, which is returning an IEnumerable of album DTO. So I'm returning a DTO, I'm not returning an entity. I've annotated it with query composition. And what that does is it says this is actually an iQueryable. So in our CodePlex bits, when our real bits ship, you'll actually put iQueryable here, but right now you have to return a return value of IEnumerable as far as the type that's on the signature, but you actually do return a queryable, which you can see here. Okay, so let's see what this will actually do for us. So if I now take this URI here, and I go into Fiddler, and I say albums, and then I'm going to use the OData format to say top equals 5. Now, I need to use content negotiation here because this service already supports, we saw the notion of returning XML, but now I actually want it to return me Adam. So I'm going to set my my accept header to be application slash Adam plus XML. And let's run that. So I got an OData feedback. See, feed right up here. Now, not only did I get an OData feedback, but I was actually able to issue a query in the sense that I specified, you know, top equals 5. I can also do other things, like I can specify an order by if I want to. For example, I could order by title. Let's try that. So we will go back to our request builder, and we'll say and order by equals title. I think this is going to work. Yes. So now we can see that I'm actually... Ooh, did that work? That doesn't look like that worked. I must have done something wrong there. Let me see. So... order by equals title. All right, well, we'll skip that one. I probably entered something syntactically wrong. Maybe it's this. Actually, let me try one other thing. Let me see if it's dollar sign order by. Is that what it is? There we go. So now I basically got that result back sorted. So I didn't have to really do anything other than just return iQueryable and expose that query composition attribute. And, of course, I had to register the format that I wanted to support. Well, if I can do that, then it would be nice if I could actually use Power Pivot, right? I should be able to because Power Pivot supports OData. But the one challenge of using Power Pivot is that Power Pivot won't send accept headers. So right now, the content negotiation that I was talking about is completely based on accept headers. So what I want to do is... have a way of specifying something potentially in the query string, and then have WCF recognize when I put that query string in, that's the format that I want. So the way I'm going to do that here is I've actually got this OData format query string processor, and this is an example of a really simple processor if you look at it. I mean, it's just taking in HTTP request message. It's looking to see if it has format equals OData in it, and if it does, then it's going to add the appropriate accept header. It's tacking on an accept header to the request that says application slash Adam plus XML. So I'm assuming if you put that format, I'm going to translate that into setting an accept header. Now, we're going to have other ways of doing this in the future, but this is how it's supported now. Okay, so let's run this and go into Power Pivot and see what happens. So we'll copy our URI here. We'll go into Power Pivot. Always get a kick out of that Power Pivot window. And then we'll say from data feeds. So we'll enter our data feed here, and we'll say albums format equals OData, top equals 10. So let's test the connection. What is wrong? Oh, wait. Localhost albums format equals OData. That should work. Did I stop the app? Oh, I didn't register the processor. That's why. So I showed you the processor, but I didn't actually register it. Okay, so let's go add the one line of code to register that processor. So what we do is we go to our configuration class here. And now in our request processors, we're going to add this OData helper, which just does the URI trick that I just mentioned. That's a nice verbose name. And that doesn't need access to anything else, because it's simply just watching the request. Now, this is one of those that when the new channels come along, you probably or would probably want to do this there, because it really doesn't have, it doesn't need anything other than HTTP. But there is a bit of overlap in that you can do some of these things as processors. And today, with the bits we have, it's the only way to do it. All right, so let's try that again. It should work this time. Yes, test connection succeeded, so let's go next. Finish. So now, because I used OData, I was able to actually pull in all this information into Power Pivot, where I could analyze it and do other kinds of things. Now, Power Pivot's just one client, but I think the point to drive home here is this idea that different clients have different capabilities, whether you're in a browser or not in a browser, and WCF is going to be there to allow you to leverage the richness of whatever clients you have. One other thing I wanted to show is that I'm not only limited to using OData. I showed you before how I was able to return things in XML. But I can do things like albums/hot, for example, and I will get the, what are the top albums that are selling, right? And this is something that MVC Store allows you to do as well. And what I can do is I can go here and query, say, by genre, and say, like, I want to show jazz albums, and I can show jazz albums as well. One other call out I wanted to do is, you guys know I used to work on the MEF team, many of you. This particular sample is actually using MEF Contrib. MEF Contrib contains this really cool convention-based programming model, which when we were designing MEF, we designed it to be able to support this. But a lot of people have said, hey, I want to use MEF and MVC. I don't really want to have to use the attributes, etc. So what you can see here is I've created a part registry, which is how you do things with MEF Contrib, and I've registered everything with a convention-based model here, where I've said, hey, register my repository as this, register my album resource, find all my controllers, and export them using the concrete type. So shout goes out to the MEF Contrib guys, and it really is nice. I was very, very impressed working with that. And you can see here that here's where I've done my configuration for MEF. Like, I've created my catalogs, I've added my convention catalog, and I've got this MEF dependency resolver, which is really simple, that basically just uses the container under the hood to do the resolution. Good question. Can I show a unit test? Well, we could write one right here for this one. We'll write it in pseudocode, but we only have 2 minutes, but let's see how far we can get with this. So that service is completely, well, actually, I won't do that. Let's do this, because we don't have a lot of time. Let's just look at the resource and see if there's anything there that's not testable. Let's use that as the argument. So if you look here, I've got my album resource. This is a WCF service. It's getting the repository. That repository can be mocked. If we look at the rest of the code on the service, everything is going off that repository, and I'm not doing anything with those HTTP request messages that I showed earlier. Now, let's take a different example, the one I showed before, the HTTP resource example, or even the contact manager. Let's take the contact manager example. So here's my contact resource. Now, my contact resource actually uses a hybrid of accessing those messages because it needs to set status codes. So it no longer has to use static APIs, though. It's not using web operation context. So same thing. I've got a repository that's getting injected, and I've got response messages getting passed in. So there's nothing here that will prevent me from running this, you know, from unit testing this. And I can even test those processors that I mentioned. Let's take a look at that as the last one. So how did I support that OData feed? So I've created here an album feed processor. This is also completely testable, right? I mean, it's basically writing to a stream. So I can hand it an instance and check the resulting stream to see that it did the right thing. I can design my processor such that dependencies get injected because I knew them up or I resolved them from an IOC. So I can have other things that are passed into the processor when it's constructed. So I think in general, everything I've shown you today is actually testable. This I didn't get to show you, but this was just showing a simple example of tagging on e-tags. Let's see if I can just enable that, and then I will get kicked out of here. But hopefully that answers your question around the testability. As I'm doing this, you can get all of this at wcf.codeplex.com. You can't get the OData stuff yet, and you can't get this sample, but I will release this sample. We are in development, but we are, you know, really viciously asking for feedback. And we are trying to do we're working on an incremental release cycle. So you'll be seeing more and more things coming out on CodePlex over the coming months. And we'd love your feedback. And let's see if my e-tag response processor works. So operation.returnValue. There we go. So here I'm addressing the ability to tack on e-tags in all my responses. So I'm going to go here. Go back to Fiddler. Let's go albums/1. And we'll just use XML. And we'll execute. Oh, I got a 401. When did I get a 401? Are we done? Okay. So if we look at the raw, you can see right there, e-tag. So another example of how with the new work that we're doing, it's very easy to plug in your own functionality to address HTTP concerns. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter as gblock. You can email me, gblock@microsoft.com. Please also go to our website. Thank you very much.